Good morning. My name is Scott McNeil. I'm a pastor of Student Ministries here. Before we kind of hop into the message today, I just want to say thank you to a couple people. First of all, thank you to Pastor David for allowing me the opportunity to preach. He's going to be back with you guys next week and kicking off a brand new series, which we're really, really excited about. So please join us next week. And then secondly, like Jamie was talking about, thank you guys so much just for the scholarship wall. We, like she was saying, we took over 170 people from fourth grade to 12th grade to summer camp this month or this year, and it was just so amazing that every single one of those people heard the gospel. They heard about God's love. They had a small group leader that was with them by their side, unpacking messages, asking questions, challenging them. It was just an amazing time. So whether you gave $5, $50, $500, whatever it was, we are so incredibly grateful that ministry happened because of you guys and because of your generosity. So thank you so much. It means the absolute world to us. I have an inordinate amount of water up here. I'm not sure what they think I'm going to do right now, but it's fine. It's all good. A lot of water. So today we are finishing off our series, The Best Summer Ever. This series has been all about our relationship with other people, which can be defined by our relationship with God. We've looked at a ton of different topics. We've looked at forgiveness, putting our faith in God, how to deal with people who are critical of us, how to deal with life when trials happen, and so much more. And here's been our desire throughout this entire series, to make you guys have the best summer ever by aligning your will with what God's will is in your life. And this can look a lot of different ways. Maybe it's offering forgiveness to someone. Maybe it's relying on God more. Maybe it's embracing the love that God offers. And for some of us, when we read this title, when we see this series title, it's so fitting. Because you had an amazing summer filled with vacation and rest and relaxation and connection with family and friends, once-in-a-lifetime trips and opportunities. You will look back on the summer of 2018 with fond memories and joy. Because the summer was filled with weddings, birthdays, maybe an engagement, a new job, and a fresh start. For others of us, we see the title Best Summer Ever, and we think of the irony in that title. Because the summer was filled with struggles and tears and failures and missed opportunities. And then for others of us, we see the title Best Summer Ever, and let's be real, unless you're under the age of 22, summer is just a time where it gets stupid hot outside, and that's it. Your work schedule doesn't change, maybe even ramps up. You don't have vacation accrued nor money to spend. And you're just like, well, it's hot outside, I guess I'll go to work. But no matter who you are, we can all be grateful that our kids are going back to school tomorrow and getting out of the house. Praise Jesus. We have a four-year-old daughter. She's starting her second year of preschool tomorrow, and I would have paid large sums of money to start that 6 weeks ago. Like, I just want that child out of my house right now. She's been doing this stupid wake up at 5 a.m. garbage. Oh my gosh. Like, what is wrong with her? And it doesn't matter what time we put her to bed. We can put her at bed at 4 a.m. She's in our room at 5 a.m. I want to watch Doc McStuffins. Like, it's just like, oh my gosh, please stop. And she does this really weird, creepy thing where, like, she kind of tiptoes into our room and then just stands, like, next to our bed staring at us. And you're asleep, but, like, you know someone's staring at you. You just wake up startled. There's an axe murderer in my house. I say all that to say, if anything happens to me, question the little one, okay? Interrogate her, just make her, like, I just want her to stop the 5 a.m. stuff. And I know what you're thinking. We have tried returning her to the hospital. It just doesn't, it's way too strict, to be honest with you. I don't really like it. But tomorrow, normalcy once again sets in. Summer is just temporary. It feels like a vapor that went by far too quickly, and normalcy arrives. And maybe you're thinking to yourself, man, this school year, this will be the year that it's different. We will have a healthy dinner around the table every single night. We will limit screen time. Homework will be done. I will finally have time for the gym, and I will finally have time for prayer and meditation, and life will be perfect. And the next weekend rolls around. The family is eating Hot Pockets in different rooms of the house. You have binged your third Netflix show of the week. Your child is somehow 3 weeks behind in the second week of school. And you've gained 10 pounds. But don't worry, you have found time for prayer and meditation. Because that is the only way you found to prevent you from strangling the members of your family. It's the only thing stopping you, really. And God bless it. But does that sound familiar? Does that sound like our life sometimes? We all want this next school year to be different. And maybe you have kids, maybe you don't. But here is the universal truth that every single one of us knows. We all want change in our lives. We want to improve our lives. We don't want to settle back into our routine. We want to start new, healthy habits. But that can be so difficult to do, right? It feels like an impossible task. How do we start these habits new? How do we get our lives to be different? How do we move from point A to point B? We want to grow closer to God, closer to our spouses, closer to our families, be more productive, and have a life that is lived to the fullest. But it's a simple question that we ask ourselves, and this simple question keeps us up at night more often than we want to admit. It's, how do I make real, meaningful change in my life? Because we have things that hold us back from that change, right? We have fear. We have laziness. We have the baggage that comes with that. If you've been in a habit that's been going on for years and years and years, that can be so hard to undo that. You have complacency. You have your circumstances or your surroundings. For a lot of us, we know what the change we need to make is, but we don't know how to make that change. When I speak to my students every single week, I try to convey very simple truths through the Bible. Because I believe that this book is relevant. This book has important information and advice for our lives right here and right now. Far too often, this book is viewed as outdated and irrelevant, and I believe the complete opposite. I truly do believe that this book talks about every single thing you will ever experience in life. Now, it might not be super obvious at first. Maybe you have a very unique situation, but there is a story or a passage somewhere in here that can speak to what you're going through. And I believe that this book has something to teach us, no matter your age, your place in life, your situation, or your beliefs. This book is powerful. And when we turn to it more often, our lives can be more enjoyable, less confusing, and ultimately more honoring to God. So today, I want to look at a story found in the Old Testament. I absolutely love Old Testament stories. They fascinate me. And today, we're going to look at a story of a king who wants to do the right thing. He is wanting to make changes in his life. He is wanting to be a better leader and a better example to the people around him. Today, we are going to be in 2 Kings chapter 22. 2 Kings is in the Old Testament. It's about 10 or 12 books in. And so if you turn there, if you have your Bibles or if you have your apps, I'd love for you guys to follow along with me. If you don't have any of those things, it's not a problem. The verses will be up on the screen. We are going to be in 2 Kings 22. We're going to start in verse 1. Here's what it says. Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. Okay, let's stop right there. So over the past like 10 or 15 years, we've heard like some really, really bad ideas on how to run a government, right? Like the crazy train has left the station at this point, right? Like, and yeah, it's probably been going on for more than 10 or 15 years. I've just been paying attention at that point, okay? Like, just be real, all right? And like, we're in a weird situation now when like anyone talks politics, like you just are gonna like fight them. I don't understand that. Like, oh, he's gonna talk politics. I'm gonna punch him in the face. Please don't. I bruise very easily, okay? I don't want to fight you, because I won't. But here's what I want to talk about today. We're not going to talk about politics. We got way more important things to talk about. But here's where I think I want to come to a kind of an understanding. Whether you vote Democrat or Republican or independent, whether you lean left or right or whatever it is, I feel like we can all agree having an 8-year-old run a government is the dumbest idea I've ever heard in my life, okay? Okay, who has an 8-year-old, like an 8-year-old son or a daughter? Does anyone have an 8-year-old? Anyone? No? No one has a date? Okay. All right. All right. What? You have a son or a daughter?
Daughter. Okay, she's already got a leg up because the girls are smarter than guys. I don't know why because I'm stupid. But anyways, this is what people tell me. Okay, what's your daughter's name? Elena. Okay. All right, I'm going to need you to like take your dad hat off right now of like, oh my gosh, she's the best. She's amazing. Okay. So tomorrow, this is not in the future. This is tomorrow. Elena is made president of the United States. I know that terrifies you. Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, how well does she do? Wow. Yes. Okay, so Saturday night, we had a mom that said a 5, which is like the most mom answer in the world. Like, I believe my daughter can do anything. It's like, maybe we should stop telling people that, you know? Like, look where it's got us. Like, a 0. Okay, I like your optimism, all right? Like, we can all agree having an 8-year-old run a government, run a nation, run even a city is the worst idea ever. Like, what is their political platform? Later bed nights for, you know, bedtimes for all? Unlimited skins for Fortnite? I don't know what you want from me, all right? Like, what is their actual political platform? Having an 8-year-old run things is such a bad idea. And to make this even worse, King Josiah, his dad and his grandfather were also kings, but they were terrible rulers. They were terrible kings. So King Josiah, his grandfather, was King Manasseh. King Manasseh basically filled the temple with these altars to pagan gods. The Bible says that he worshipped all the starry hosts, which is Bible speak for he worshipped anything and everything, basically hoping to get it right. He was just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping that it sticks, okay? And when people would come to him and try to turn him back to the true God, he would have them killed. It is actually believed that King Manasseh is the one responsible for killing the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah wrote a book in the Old Testament called creatively, Isaiah, and he is actually the one responsible for killing him. And then Josiah's father, King Amon, he also did terrible things. He filled the temple with false idols. He had people killed, innocent people. His rap sheet isn't as long because he only served for 2 years before his servants assassinated him. Okay, so you have this 8-year-old whose father was a terrible king, whose grandfather was a terrible king, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is a recipe for disaster. How can this actually work? And you know what? It actually works. 2 Kings 22, verse 2. It says, he, Josiah, did right in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his father David, nor did he turn aside to the right or to the left. So you had this 8-year-old king that was set up for disaster. You had this lineage that was just so much of a train wreck. There's no way he could have succeeded, but he actually did. So in that verse, just a real quick aside, it says that his father was David. His father was not actually David. There's about 400 years in between them. But King Josiah acted more like King David that they actually thought that he was their father, even though there's 400 years. Basically, like, you're nothing like your father, your grandfather, so we're just going to give you a new dad, which is a very strange concept, but whatever. The Bible's weird sometimes. Anyways, so let's continue on. We're going to keep reading in 2 Kings 22. We're going to start up in verse 3, and we're going to fast forward a couple years. It says, in the 18th year of his reign, King Josiah sent the secretary. Okay, we'll stop right there. So I have this rule that I try to teach my junior high and high schoolers that whenever you come across a name or a word, specifically in Old Testament, that you don't know how to pronounce, you just make something up, okay? Or mumble through it because none of y'all know how to pronounce it anyways, so who are you to judge, all right? So let's continue on. In the 18th year of his reign, King Josiah sent Shaquille O'Neal, son of whatever that word is, to the temple of the Lord. He said, go up to, I'm not sure how to pronounce that one, the high priest, and have him get ready the money that has been brought into the temple of the Lord, which the doorkeepers have collected from the people. Have them entrusted to the men appointed to supervise the work on the temple. And have these men pay the workers who repair the temple of the Lord, the carpenters, the builders, and the masons. Also have them purchase timber and dress stone to repair the temple. So here's what's happening. We're fast-forwarding about 20 years into King Josiah's reign. And King Josiah is a great ruler. He is a great king, but he has not exactly cleaned up the mess that his father and grandfather have made. The temple is in ruins. The temple is destroyed. The temple is just being completely neglected. It is filled with altars and items used to worship pagan gods. So he sends word to the people that they need to clean it up. So take the money that's been gathered over these past couple years, go in, take out the false idols, start to clean it up, let's dress it up, let's make this place look amazing, because we want to return to the temple and worship God there. And so the people begin to do that. But there's something interesting that happens as they are cleaning out the temple. We're going to skip down a couple verses to 2 Kings 22, starting in verse 8. Hilkiah, the high priest, said to Shaka Khan, y'all didn't even catch that one. Like, you didn't know. You're like, oh, Shaka Khan sounds good. I could have called him Sham Wow. You know, the little napkin thing? You wouldn't have noticed. Anyways, I have found the book of the law in the temple of the Lord. He gave it to him to read it. And then the secretary went to the king and reported to him, your officials have paid out the money that was in the temple of the Lord and have entrusted it to the workers and supervisors of the temple. Then the secretary informed the king, the priest has given me a book. And he read from it in the presence of the king. When the king heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his robes. Skip down a couple verses to verse 13. Josiah says, go and inquire of the Lord for me and for the people and for all of Judah about what is written in this book that has been found. Great is the Lord's anger that burns against us because those who have gone before us have not obeyed the words in this book. They have not acted in accordance with all that is written concerning us. So as the men are cleaning out this temple, they come across these ancient text. And essentially, they come across the Bible. They come across the writings of Moses. And they bring that to Josiah, and they begin to read it aloud in front of Josiah. And in that moment, Josiah is convicted. He knows that he has followed after God, but he also knows that he has neglected the temple. He let the temple sit in ruins for years. He let the temple be full of false idols and altars to pagan gods. And he knows in this moment something must be done. He can no longer live and rule like this. We have similar moments in our life, right? When we feel convicted about a sin. Maybe a habit that we have has turned into a full-fledged addiction. Maybe we have a relationship, an unhealthy relationship that we know cannot continue. We have a lifestyle that must end. And in that moment, we are faced with a choice. Continue down the path that you were already going down. A path that is probably full of more pain and more regret and more guilt. Or forge a new path. Go in a new direction. And that new direction and that new path can be so scary. It can be so difficult. Because that path is full of the unknown, and the unknown terrifies us time and time again. But our old ways are comfortable and easy and familiar. But almost all the time, they will lead to more pain and more guilt. And in this moment, Josiah is left with a choice. I can stop my people right now. I can just let the temple, I can leave it how it was. We'll just continue going down the path we were. Everything's good. We're all right. The country is settled. We're fine. Or he can go down the unknown and forge a new path. But ultimately, this path leads to a greater understanding of who God is. And that's what Josiah does. He decides to go in a new direction. We're going to skip ahead to 2 Kings 23, so just the very next chapter, starting in verse 1. It says, then the king, Josiah, called together all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. He went up to the temple of the Lord with the people of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the priests and the prophets, all the people from the least to the greatest. He read in their hearing all the words of the book of the covenant, which had been found in the temple of the Lord. The king stood by the pillar and renewed the covenant in the presence of the Lord to follow the Lord, to keep his commandments, his statutes, his decrees with all of their heart, all of their soul, thus confirming the word of the covenant written in this book. Then all the people pledged themselves to that covenant. So Josiah goes up, he leads them up on this mountain, and he gathers everyone. He gathers the elders and the prophets. He gathers the least to the greatest. He gathers every single person that he can find, and they enter into this covenant to walk after God, to keep his commandments, and to carry out this covenant with all of their heart and with all of their soul. And I read this story and I can't help but think of my own life and possibly your life. Because so often I want to make meaningful, significant change in my life. I want to be a better father, a better husband. I want to be more disciplined with my money. I want to treat others more kindly. I want to be a better leader, a better pastor, and ultimately I want to follow God more closely. But so often, I fail at those things. And maybe this commitment that I've made lasts for a couple days. Maybe it lasts for a couple weeks. But eventually, I return to my old ways. I so desperately want to establish better habits, but I fail far more often than I actually succeed. But I read this story, and I see how Josiah handles this situation. I see the conviction that he has. I see the change that he desires to make. And I see three things that Josiah does that leads to real, meaningful, and lasting change in his life. And I want those things to be our story as well. I don't want this to just be some nice story that we read in the Bible and be like, oh, that was great. That's great for Josiah. That's great for the people of Jerusalem and Judah. But what does that mean for me? I think this has a lot to do with our story. And yes, you might not be a ruler of a nation, but these principles can apply to your life no matter who you are or where you are in life. The first thing he does to lead to real, meaningful, impactful change is he looks for opportunities to connect to God. He does this by restoring the temple. He is not content with his relationship with God anymore. He knows that he needs to seek out God. How are you seeking out God? How are you trying to deepen your relationship with God? What opportunities are you looking for? And it might look different for all of us. We have so many opportunities to connect here at Cross City, whether it's a men's group or a women's Bible study or a life group. Maybe that's the avenue you need to go down so you can connect with other people and you can connect with your Bible in a deeper way and connect with God. Maybe for some of you guys, it's Rooted. Rooted is starting up in a couple weeks. It's the week after Labor Day. And Rooted is an amazing 10-week experience for you to understand who God is, who you are, and how you fit into the body of this church. It's an amazing experience that we recommend every single person go through. But maybe you're connected with God. And maybe your quiet times are going good. Maybe you're involved in a Bible study. You're involved in a life group, whatever it is. But maybe for you, you just need to serve more. Right now, as we're talking, Pastor Joe is actually leading a group of people on a serve tour. Now, a serve tour is an amazing thing that we do here. It's an amazing kind of idea that Joe kind of navigates through. And what this is about once a month, he takes a group of people, and they basically get a behind-the-scenes look of every single ministry that we offer here. And then those people can see, oh, this is a great opportunity. Maybe I want to serve in children's. Maybe I want to serve in junior high. Maybe I want to serve at the frat house. Maybe I want to serve in tech. Whatever it is, you get an opportunity to see that ministry in action, and then you can serve in that ministry. Maybe that's your connection point. Maybe that's how you can deepen your relationship with God. For others of you, maybe your connection point is simply making church a greater priority this school year. It's been on the back burner for a lot of us. And I'll go when I have time. I'll go, but as long as it doesn't interrupt anything else. But whatever that connection point is, you need to make it a priority, and you need to make it sustainable, something you can do for the long haul. If you're wanting to read your Bible more and you're not a morning person, saying I'm going to wake up at 6 a.m. every single morning to read my Bible is the dumbest idea you could ever have. Because that's going to last for a day. Maybe if you're really stubborn, it'll last for a week. Because that's not sustainable. If you are a morning person, then do it then. But you need to find a way to connect with God. Maybe it's through worship, through music. Maybe it's reading your Bible. Maybe it's prayer. Maybe it's serving others. And then you need to find a time to connect with God. Maybe it is in the morning. Maybe it is at night. Maybe it's during your lunch hour or during your morning or evening commute. And if something doesn't work at first, try something else. If you didn't connect with a life group, try a different life group. If you didn't connect in serving in one area, try to serve in a different area. Because your relationship with God is worth that effort. And God will honor that effort every single time.
It might not have stuck the first time, but eventually it will, and you will be in exactly the place that God wants you, and you're like, man, this is what I need to do. The second thing Josiah does that leads to real impactful change is he feels conviction when he is confronted with his sin. That's the second fill-in. How do you respond when you feel conviction, when you are confronted with your sin? It says in that passage that we read that Josiah tore his clothes. There's a symbol in the Old Testament that basically it's a sign of grief and loss and humility. It's a sign that basically he was so broken by what he just heard, because remember, they were reading the law of Moses, and he was so broken by it that he had to humble himself. He wanted to turn away from his old ways and go in a new direction. Josiah knew that he could not keep heading down the path that he was heading down. How do you respond in these moments? Josiah knew he was neglecting the temple. He was neglecting being in the presence of God. Think about that. As they were walking into the temple, think about the dust and the grime that had been in there for years of being untouched. Think about the smell that was in there. And as they walk in there and they begin to take items out, as they begin to kind of clear the cobwebs away, they come across these old papers. And at first, they can't really tell what they are. There's so much dirt and grime and junk on it. And they begin to carefully wipe away these papers, and they can see what's written on it. And they see in this moment that this is the writings of Moses. These are the writings of God himself. This is the history of the Israelite people. And so they take it back to Josiah, and they begin to read it aloud to him. And Josiah hears story after story after story of God protecting his people, God providing for his people. And in this moment, Josiah is hearing all about God's faithfulness, how over and over and over again, God was faithful to his people. And in that moment, Josiah realized that we never return the favor to God, that we were not faithful to him, that he has provided for us so much in our lives. And the guilt that he feels leads him to make significant change in his life. I don't know about you, but I do not respond well when I'm confronted with my sin and failure. I give excuses, I deny it, I do everything I can to change the subject. Josiah doesn't do any of those things. He does not run from it. He does not deny it. He actually embraces it. He owns the failure and sin in his life, and then he vows to change. But the most interesting part about this story is a part I think we can overlook. Because yes, Josiah wants to make this significant life change in his own life, but he does something interesting. He knows that this journey he's about to go on should not be taken by himself. He knows that he has a responsibility as a leader, he has a responsibility as a follower of God to push other people towards God and invite them into their own journey. The third thing that Josiah does is he invites others on his journey of change. Every single one of us is in the place we are in life today because of someone else. If you are a follower of God, you know that most people don't come to know God without the love of other people. And every single one of you have gifts and abilities that are God-given. God gave you those things that you are talented at and that you are amazing at, and you have passions about that. And God gave you those gifts to serve the people around you. We have children in this church that need your gifts. We have students in this church that need your gifts. We have ministries in this church that need your gifts. This church needs you and your gifts. You can make a huge impact on the people around you, just like Josiah did. But what change can you make today? What habit do you need to start? What routine do you need to end? You see, tomorrow is giving all of us a fresh start. It's a new school year. Will you take that opportunity, Or will you treat it like any other Monday, any other day of the week? The story of Josiah ends in 2 Kings 23, verse 25, and it says this. It says, "Neither before nor after Josiah was there a king like him, who turned to the Lord as he did with all of his heart and with all of his soul and with all of his strength, in accordance with all of the laws of Moses." You see, Josiah was someone that made real, meaningful, significant change in his life. He followed after God with all of his heart, with all of his soul, and with all of the strength that he had. And you have the same opportunity to do that today. What change will you make? Will you return to your old ways, those old ways that are easy and comfortable and familiar, but more often than not lead to more pain and more guilt? Or will you forge a new path? Will you go down a new direction? Even though it's scary, even though it's difficult, even though you don't know what is next, because God is offering you that opportunity today. But it's your choice. I pray that this school year will be your best ever. Students, I pray that this would be the school year that you follow after God closer than you ever have. Parents, I pray that this school year, you would be the example that your children need. Today, maybe you need help with those changes. You need accountability. You need prayer. You just need to know how to change those things in your life. You know exactly what needs to be changed, but you just don't know where to start. We're going to go into a time of prayer and worship right now, and there's going to be men and amazing men and women up here that if you just need prayer, you need accountability, you need to know what's next in life, I would invite you just to come up and pray. For some of you, maybe you just need to take this opportunity to learn more about God. Because here's what I know, that simple question of how do I make real, meaningful, significant change in my life, God has the ability to do that. God has the ability to change you. God has the ability to change who you are. God has the ability to change you and change your circumstances. And ultimately, God has the ability to change you into something new, to something fresh, to a brand new start, to a brand new beginning. And if that's you, if you just need prayer for that, if you need prayer for those changes, if you just say, today I just need to get baptized, I need to turn away from my old ways, because yes, my old ways are comfortable, but it's causing me so much pain, and I need to forge this new direction to God. If that's you, during this time of worship, I would just invite you to come up and pray and say, please help me. So I invite you just to stand as we go into this time of prayer.